Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Dealers of Ireland. Our showrooms are open for business with your health and safety our priority. For more, log on to kia.com.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rte.ie. From minister to Wheatfield prisoner number 92995. Such was the fall from grace for the man who once declared his desire to be Taoiseach of the country. The story goes that for Ivor Callaly, high office was marked out when he was just 3 years old. A fortune teller apparently told his mother that our boy would be Taoiseach one day. Instead, his time as a public representative, though renowned as a tireless constituency worker, was marred by controversy on top of controversy. Shortly after, in 2005, he was elected, by the way, to the Dáil in 1995. In 1999, he had another elevation, and then he became a junior minister in the Department of Health. But in 2005, it emerged that one of the largest construction firms in the country arranged for Callaly's home in Clontarf to be painted for free. This dated back to the 1990s. The same building company had done work for the Eastern Health Board, which had Callaly, Ivor Callaly, as its chair at the time. He was a poll topper, fifth highest vote in Dáil elections, highest vote in local elections in all the country. But the poll topper failed to get returned to the Dáil in 2007. And he also failed to get elected to the Shannon, but served as one of Bertie Ahern's nominees. Just 3 years later, it emerged that during his time in the Shannon, Ivor Callaly had been claiming travel expenses from his holiday home in West Cork to Leinster House. This long, drawn-out saga finally ended when the Supreme Court at Callaly had ruled that Ivor Callaly had misrepresented his normal place of residence as being in Bantry in Cork rather than Clontarf in Dublin. But by this stage, all of this was overshadowed by his arrest and conviction for fraudulently claiming more than €4,000 on mobile phone expenses while he was a TD. He was jailed for 5 months. Delivering her ruling, the presiding judge, Mary Ellen Ring, said sometimes explanations are forwarded, which can mitigate a crime, but said in this case, there was no explanation except the excuse of entitlement. In August last year, Ivor Callaly suffered horrific injuries in a cycling accident. A tree fell on him in West Cork. This is the first time Ivor Callaly has spoken about all his travails and his horrific accident in many, many years. Ivor Callaly, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Hi, how are you?
How are you, more to the point? Take us back to this horrific accident last August.
Yeah, Joe, look, we all have incidents in our lives. Unfortunately, I had quite a bad smack. I think we all know I've been through a bit of a turbulent period in my life over recent times. Mm-hmm. And if there was one thing that I really enjoyed, it was getting down to West Cork and doing a bit of cycling. Yeah. And on a very fine summer, sunny day in August, beautiful weather, early in the morning, I was out for a bit of a cycle to help clear my head around certain issues. Mm-hmm. And really, Joe, I can't recall much of the incident itself. Mm-hmm. Other than there was a bit of a storm or a gale the night before, so I presume some of the trees along the road were damaged. But when I was out, it was a beautiful, calm morning. Okay. And all I can really recall is something hitting my head.
Wow.
And the next I knew, I was on the ground. I've no recollection of, you know, really what happened in that split instant. Yeah. Other than I couldn't move, Joe. I was really frightened. And I haven't really spoken to anybody about this, so bear with me
Ivor, you're lying on the ground in a very lonely road. Were you conscious? Were you awake?
Joe, when I came through, I knew there was something seriously wrong because I couldn't move. I couldn't move my face. My face was stuck to the ground and I couldn't move it. I knew none of my limbs were moving. And I had this most frightening experience of my head was spinning around like a football, and it was totally disconnected from my body, which was an appalling, upsetting sensation. And I have to say, it was probably the most fearful time in my life.
Yeah.
There was nobody with me, and there was nobody in the immediate area of the incident. And therefore, you know, I called out for help, but I was weak. I presume my call didn't travel far. And of course, like most of us, when we're in that situation, Joe, we just go into survival mode.
Yeah.
And that's what I had to do. I was lying there about 40 minutes, Joe. I was lying on the road, and I was delighted to hear a car coming.
Okay.
And I heard the car coming, and I heard it braking.
Mm.
And the next thing I heard it going into reverse and reversing away. And I just couldn't believe it. Now, I couldn't see the car, and yeah. I couldn't see anything. So I didn't know where I was, and I didn't know what was around me. I did learn later on there was a tree across the road.
Uh-huh.
So I presume the driver came, saw the tree, and just reversed away.
And would not have been able to see you on the ground beyond the tree.
Well, I don't know, because I don't know where he came from, and I just don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do know about another. That was about 40 minutes, and I reckon it was probably another 20 minutes or so, because Joel was just so frightening. It was everything went through my head. My life went through my head. What lay ahead of me went through my head. Was I going to die on the side of the road? Mm-hmm. I was all alone. It was a particularly poignant time with flashbacks of life, I suppose, and a great sense of sadness and fearful of the unknown.
Yeah.
But about 20 minutes later, I heard another car coming, and I heard footsteps. And this man, I think he was very, very frightened himself, because he saw, I presume, a lifeless body on the side of the road with a lot of blood, because my face was in a mess. And he just came up, and all I can remember him doing was saying something like, "Hello, are you in trouble?" Mm. And it was just such a pleasure to hear that man.
Yeah.
I couldn't see him. All I could see was his shoes. And he immediately let me know that he was going to call the emergency services.
Oh,
and I must say, he showed great kindness to me. I think he was a little scared, and he did call his wife and ask her to come down.
Yeah.
And a short time later, the first responders arrived and carried out an immediate assessment. And they decided that they wouldn't bring me to the local hospital. They were bringing me straight to Cork for A&E. And then they said that there was a spinal unit in A&E, or in Cork. And so basically, that's what happened to me.
Your neck was in Cork. You had a broken neck.
In layman's terms, yeah.
Yeah, and the word quadriplegic was used at one stage.
Yeah, Joe, I was, you know, some people may think that I would know different language, but, you know, the whole thing was a bit of a blur, and you're meeting so many people. What I do know was, when I arrived in A&E in Cork, there seemed to be a lot of attention given to me due to my level of injury and a lot of concern about the level of injury. And I went through A&E, and I have to give praise to everybody involved.
Yeah.
They did all the assessments, and they sent me straight up to the spinal unit, and the spinal unit carried out a load more of assessments. And my understanding was that they said I presented as an incomplete quadriplegic.
Wow.
I had serious limb impairment. I had neurogenic bowel and bladder was initially diagnosed with seemingly a level of hypersensitivity throughout my body. But look, after two or three days in Cork, I forget how many days, they decided that they would send me to the National Spinal Unit, a special unit in the Mater Hospital.
Okay.
So I was transferred there, and I at this stage, Joe, I still wasn't feeling anything in my body from my neck down.
Wow.
And all that was happening to me was I was being swabbed, you know, with my lips was being swabbed. Now, I think I might have been on some type of an IV. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But look, you know, I arrived in the matter, and again, you know, I met so many beautiful people. Between the professionals and between the colleagues in the beds mm-hmm. beside you. But anyway, they carried out a surgical procedure, which meant quite a long operation. They went in the front of the neck. And from what I gather, there was some broken bones that they needed to staple together. There were some discs that they needed to fuse and put in a titanium disc to do the work of the other discs.
But Ivor, did they say to you before, sorry, such a major operation, and given the condition you were in, did they say to you, listen, Ivor, we can try this operation or you can stay as you are? Like, it's going into the neck is a pretty risky procedure.
Yeah, Joe, and I was really scared. And I have to say, I know you're a Clontarf man, and another Clontarf man, a near neighbour of yours, beautiful man, and I hope he won't mind me mentioning his name, but a consultant surgeon, Keith Sinnott, approached me in the Mater Hospital. And, you know, I was never in hospital in my life, Joe. Yeah, okay. I hadn't spent a night in hospital. And now I'm a couple of days in hospital and really frightened. And Keith came to me and he let me know that there was a decision here between the rock and the hard place. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, you know, that I could continue to look at the ceiling tiles or give him consent to do the operation. Wow. And he was very helpful. He explained mm-hmm. everything, and he certainly indicated that there was great risk involved.
Obviously,
involved. Yeah. And that there could be residual injuries and damage. Mm. But of course, you know, he was going in to help me. He was going in to do his best and his team. And I had to put my faith in him, I did.
But you were scared going into that operation, I presume.
It was really, you know, it was such a blur, the whole thing. And, you know, being transported from the scene of the accident to Cork, which was a long haul. It was a 2-hour haul. And then from Cork to Dublin, and then all these CAT scans and MRIs and X-rays and different people coming and different people poking you and doing things and explaining things. And Joe, I remember one of them saying to me, you know, you've done this, that, and the other damage. And when he went on, he spoke about I'd done C4, C5, C6, and C7 damage. And he went on to say, you know, you have an incomplete injury. And when he finished, I wasn't sure what C4 and C5 was, or C6 or C7, or what functions it did. But I was trying to figure it out in my head. But I did say to him, I said to him, I'm sorry, you mentioned the word there, incomplete. That really worries me. And he very quickly said, you know, you're very fortunate. It's the reverse of what you're thinking. If you had a complete injury, we wouldn't be able to help you here. But you have what we would call a double rupture of your spinal cord. And it's giving us very little room for manoeuvring it, but we are happy that we will be able to resettle it and we will get you standing. So, Joe, it was. I have to pay tribute and
incredible.
You know, to Keith Sinnott, to the team in the Mater Hospital. They were I express my profound appreciation and thanks to them all, everyone. And Joe, you know, in recent times we're going through this COVID-19 and we've seen great solidarity and great respect and love for one another. I have to say, that's what I experienced. It was a surreal experience, the whole thing. But you met great people. Yeah. I met some beautiful angels who looked after me, and I met some great colleagues. And Joe, interesting, I'm still in contact with people who I met, you know, other patients who I met in the different wards that I was in. I landed up in the National Rehabilitation Hospital. I was in hospital August, September, October, November, December, January. And I was in Cork University. I was in the Mater Hospital. Mm-hmm. I was in Kappa Hospital and the National Rehabilitation Hospital. So it was a long, hard haul.
And how are you today, Ivor? What can you walk? Can you? What can you do and what can you not do? Can I ask, be blunt if I can?
Yeah, look, Joe, first and foremost, I do have residual difficulties. Mm. They say a spinal injury is one of the most debilitating injuries anyone can ever suffer. Yeah. Because really, you know, your freedom is snatched away from you. And simple things that you take for granted, you just can't do it. I can't jump in a car. Joe, you know, I was a keen cyclist. Absolutely. I was a keen jogger.
Yeah, and a keen gym.
I can't.
Gym bunny as well.
Yeah. I can't cycle, Joe. I can't jog. Mm. I walk with the aid of sticks. Now, you know, I'm like most other people who have a disability or who are invalided in some way. I've good days and I've bad days. And there's many people out there like me. You know, we suffer a great level of pain. We're unable to sleep. It affects your cognitive function. You're fatigued. You have a level of anxiety. And of course, you suffer great personal hurt, Joe. But, you know, I try to present myself as best I can. I try to get out and do things. Mm. I can't do what I'd like to do. Joe, I haven't worn a pair of tie-on shoes since the accident. Mm. I can't put on a pair of socks properly. I can't put on my trousers properly. I'm not able to button shirts. But, you know, I'm mobile, Joe.
And I presume I'm assuming your rehab is suspended because of COVID, is it? Physio.
Sorry?
And I presume physio and rehab is suspended because of COVID-19.
Unfortunately, Joe, I was being discharged from the National Rehabilitation just as you know, things were being planned for me for outpatients and rehabilitation. Now, I have, like most people who have a spinal injury, they certainly discharged me from the NRH very well prepared. I've different squeezy balls, I've elastic bands, I've a load of exercises. So I'm doing all of that. But appointments, unfortunately, have been cancelled. And I have to say, Joe, again, you know, we knock people too often in our health services, even though they're the heroes of and people have acknowledged that. But the same consultant, Keith Sinnott, actually rang me on the phone not so long ago to say he was aware that the hospital appointments was cancelled, but he wanted to know how I was getting on.
Right,
about, you know, so it was just absolutely fantastic. I've had a tremendous experience. I'm suffering with a spinal cord injury, and I do have residual problems, and it's very difficult to live with, and it's hard to manage. But I'm not the only one out there, Joe. Okay. I try to present as best I can, and there's a lot of us with spinal injuries, and I have to, you know, thank everybody who was involved, from the man who found me on the side of the road, and it must have been a frightening experience.
And did you ever talk to him since? Have you spoken to him since, Ivor? The man who found you?
I didn't see him on the day because I couldn't move my neck or head. All I could see was his shoes. He very kindly, I think he actually got a big fight himself because he called his wife. He found this lifeless body with a load of blood and guts on the road. And his wife came down and she was very kind and stayed with me for a while. Basically, Joe, you know, there's been a host of people who have been so good to me and have been so helpful. And it is a debilitating injury. And for those who found me, it must have been an awful shock and fright.
But just to go back to you lying on that road, Ivor, in a lonely country road, you don't know what's happened. I think you said to me at one stage, the only part of your body that you could actually move were your lips and your eyebrows, maybe at that stage. The tree was blocking the road, so any car approaching would think it was a tree down after the storm and did a U-turn, which happened, and takes a diversion. But and you said you were lying on the road and your life was flashing before you. Now, you've gone from, and we're not going to talk about your personal life, but you've gone from being a junior minister in the Department of Health that you so rightly praised a few minutes ago, to going to prison for expenses. What was prison like?
It was quite horrific, Joe. It was a daunting experience, and it was complicated by a host of other issues that any reasonable person will find difficult to believe and indeed wish to experience. So I've had my difficulties. I've come through them. They've been real life experiences.
They've all been in the public eye.
That has been pretty difficult. And, Joe, with respect to people in the media, they have a job to do. And a lot of the time, they add a level of sensationalization to whatever story they're presenting for obvious reasons.
Yeah, but so well, come back to prison life. You said there was a load where in terms of complications, is it because you were a former minister, you were in prison? Did that in itself meant, did you have to have protection or into a separate cell or whatever, separate unit?
That caused some difficulties for the services. It also caused problems for me, because what they did was basically put you into solitary, which meant locked up for 23 to 24 hours a day. So it was quite daunting, Joe. And there's issues associated with it.
Do you remember the cell being closed on your foresight around what, 6 or 7 o'clock, when your cell is closed for the night? Do you remember that first experience?
Of course, Joe. It was very clinical. And difficult, but I'm over that. There are issues associated with that.
How did you pass your time? You're such, like, you on the one hand, you have this incredible reputation when you were a TD for 13 years in Dublin North Central, and before that for many years as a councillor. You had this incredible reputation as a constituency worker. Probably Seamus Brennan once said to me, you were the best constituency worker in the country. You had your caravan there at Merino Mart every Saturday. You used to drive down with your Volkswagen Beetle in the small little Father Ted caravan, park it there, and you'd say that Ivor is available to see, and you see people queuing outside. So he had this incredible reputation as a constituency worker. It was not unknown, and I've seen you, it was not unknown when the time of all the IRA slogans going up, this graffiti going up around the place, it was not unknown for you as a minister to go down with, instead of waiting on the services to obliterate the obnoxious messages, for you to go down, nothing to do with you, for you to go down in the morning early and paint them yourself. So you had this incredible reputation as a constituency worker. Then you became a minister, and then you're in all this expenses debacle, and you end up in prison. So how did you pass your time in prison, such a busy man?
Yeah, look, Joe, I was involved in politics from the early 1980s, elected in 1985, and right through to 2011. So I had a very long-standing good career, and I greatly enjoyed the level of support that I received from my constituents in Dublin North Central. I think they appreciated the level of work that I did.
I know that, yeah.
I really welcomed the level of support that I received. I very much enjoyed my work,
I've outlined that, but just to come back to the two points. One, how did you pass? Did you study in prison? Did you read? Did you do a course?
Well, Joe, for one reason or another, I was locked up 23 hours for the first couple of weeks. What I went about was writing a book, which I have written. It's basically my real life experiences from a very early age. right through to, as you put it, landing up where the nightmare began when the cell door banged closed.
And did you, when you were lying on that on August last year, lying on the ground for nearly an hour waiting for help, waiting for help to be summoned, basically, and you said your life flashed before you, what was the inventory? What was your feeling? What, on the plus and the minus, did you say to yourself, where did it all go wrong? How did I end up in prison? How did I end up, every time my name is mentioned in the newspaper, it's always prefaced by disgraced former government minister Ivor Callaghan. What was big in your mind at that awful time in your life when you're on that ground?
Well, Joe, first, you're right. There has been some sensational headlines associated with my name, and it's for obvious reasons that some media outlets will run with stuff like that. It's to get attention. And, you know, fellas in public life become adjusted to that. But what I can say to you is, lying on the ground, everything went through my head, Joe. Every single thing. I first, when I realised that, you know, I was unable to move. What can you do? As I said, you get into a survival mode, but everything goes through your head. I thought I was going to die there. Certainly, when the car came along and reversed away, I thought that was a missed opportunity. That now I was done for.
Okay, I'm talking to Ivor Callaghan, former junior minister in the Fianna Fáil government, and we'll be back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Ivor Callaghan, former junior minister in the Department of Health, TD for many years in Dublin, and a controversial figure as he outlined himself there. And we began talking about the horrific accident last August when he broke his neck in a bicycle accident and was deemed an incomplete paraplegic. And I know at one stage Ivor was telling me previously a wheelchair was mentioned for the rest of his life. Ivor, when you were lying on the ground and your life was flashing before you, did you say to yourself, where did it all go wrong?
Of course, Joe. Everything jumped in front of me. And I was very sad. I was very lonely. And if I be honest, I shed a tear because I thought I was just going to die on the side of the road. And I was just so happy when that man came and found me. And then just miraculously I survived the accident and it was a near-death experience.
When you were shedding the tear, Ivor, obviously the horrific nature of your injuries, just unbearable even to think about. But were you shedding a tear because of the prospect of dying or the prospect that every newspaper headline, if God forbid you did die, and thankfully you didn't, would be disgraced former government minister Ivor Callaghan was killed in a cycling accident yesterday?
Yeah, I think I was so close to that headline. It was a near-death experience. I think I was a fraction away from it. I was lying there. Joe, when this type of thing happens here, there's nothing you can do. I had to go into survival mode.
Okay, I understand.
I was lying there for a while. Time was passing, and I knew I was getting weaker, and I didn't think I could pull myself through. And yes, I shed a tear on where I went wrong in life. I have made mistakes, but I'm a human being, Joe. We all make mistakes, and I've learned from those mistakes. I have a lot of difficulties and problems, and I regret them. Okay. But you know, I've done a lot of good work as a public representative, and I was greatly encouraged by the number of people who made contact with me and encouraged me through my illness and my rehabilitation process.
Did many of your former political colleagues contact you after they heard about the accident, Ivor?
Yes, they did. And I was delighted to receive their calls. A number of colleagues from the Oireachtas made contact with me and wished me well.
And did the man who elevated you, Bertie Ahern, did he call you?
Yes, Bertie and myself have been in contact. And he has wished me well. And Bertie and myself get on well together, and I was very pleased. You will understand when I received his calls and when we spoke.
And but Ivor, back to this question: when you're lying on the ground, where did it all go wrong? And you're upset and you're crying. Apart from the horrific nature of your injuries, a broken neck, an incomplete quadriplegic, as you subsequently discovered. What went wrong, Ivor? Was it greed? Was it a sense of entitlement? Was it bad decisions? Now, I know, and to be fair, in one sense, it's not often that somebody goes to prison for 5 months for over €4,000. It's not often that happens, but you did go to prison for 5 months, and that will stay with you, unfortunately, for the rest of your life, especially in headlines. But where were your mistakes, do you think? Was it a sense of entitlement, as one judge said? Was it greed? Was it arrogance? Was it stupidity? You're not stupid. We know that. You're not stupid. What was it, Ivor?
Well, look, Joe, I'm not too sure if many people know I got out of prison by way of a court order of president of the court. The whole thing was a daunting experience. Yeah, and
what's ahead of you in the future, Ivor, do you think? We know you're a hard worker. You set up a second-hand car business, didn't you, a number of years ago?
That's right.
Yeah, and as I said to people recently, like Ivor has a second-hand car business, and we've never got a single complaint against you. So you're obviously were doing well in that business, because I suspect if anything had gone wrong, people would have got onto the media quickly, wouldn't they?
Yeah, look, Joe, you know, I was selling cars, and I was selling electric scooters. I haven't been able to do that really since the accident. I'm hoping to get back. But I'm like a lot of people. There's a lot of people out there who have injuries and it's not visible. And of course, the Department of Health run an education awareness about not all injuries are visible. But I try to present myself as best I can. I'm hoping that I will overcome the residual issues I have. I'm told by my medical people that it will take about 2 years before I'm out of the woods, and before I know how good I'll be. But you know, simple things like forgetfulness, Joe, is a problem for me at the moment. Fatigue is a problem. There's personal hurts. There's embarrassing internal organ problems, you know. So, but I say, there's many other people out there, and what we have to do, and I've met some great friends. I've met some great friends when I was in every hospital, and we stick together. I still talk to people, and you know, there's a great level of support.
Yeah, and rightly so.
And but spinal cord injury.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe, yeah?
No, just there's one paragraph when you were speaking to Rebecca, our producer. You say, I know I'm not the first person to come off their bike. I'm not the first person to have problems with the banks. I'm not the first person to have domestic difficulties. I'm not the first person to get into trouble with the law. I'm not the first person to have a political past. But I'm probably one of the only people who have had all of those things happen in their lives. That's an incredible list, Ivor.
It is. It's been quite a turbulent and difficult period. And
when you were lying on the ground, did you say to yourself, well, if I come through this, I'll say sorry to some people, I'll try and atone, I don't know, what was going through your head?
It was all going through my head, Joe, and exactly as you've said, I have said sorry to people, I have made apologies to people, I have undertaken different things that I wanted to do, and certainly I like everything else in my life, I take everything as an experience. I try and learn from mistakes that I've made in the past, and I try also to make good wherever I can now. You know, I wake up every morning, Joe, and I say to myself, you know, happy and be glad in the day that the Lord has made, rejoice. And of course, you know, the Chinese philosopher Confucius, our greatest glory is not in never falling, but it's in rising every time we do fall.
So what keeps you going? Is it religion? Is it self-help? Is it your own determination? Is it your family? Is it your parents? What keeps you going through all that? All those events that could have crumpled you.
Yeah, Joe, I suppose it's a multitude of things. I had fabulous parents, fabulous family. Some of the family has been fragmented and hurt by some of the things, and it's not as good as it was. But what keeps me going is, I suppose, there's a certain level of, which is a normal thing when any one of us come into difficulty, I suppose there's a level of resilience that we need. Mm. And, basically, I suppose, arising from the accident, I've changed. Well, the accident has changed my life forever. Mm-hmm. And every day is a reminder of the accident.
Okay.
And as the months have rolled by, fear has collided with the cold, crisp reality of living with a disability and restriction. So mm-hmm. I look at life differently now.
Okay. And Ivor, do you have regrets? Because one thing that strikes people is when you had to resign as a junior minister in 2005, that was over this whole, people say, it's a stupid thing you got involved in, where a builder painted your house, but the builder also was doing work for, they painted your house free, gratis and for nothing, as to say, and was doing work for the Eastern Health Board, of which you were chairperson, but you didn't need the money. The expenses, which landed you in prison, was €4,000. Then there was an issue about where you were living, West Cork or Clontarf, and all the expenses claimed there. But, like, you didn't need the money. Why were you doing this?
Yeah, look, Joe, first and foremost, there was sufficient expenses if I had submitted other receipts.
Yeah, so but
there
you, was may, no you need, made up you made up invoices, to, Ivor. Let's not. You know, what possessed you?
No, I'm not going to go over it on the airways, but I didn't make up invoices, but I did make a wrong submission, and I accept that. So look, Joe, I'm a human being. I've made mistakes in my life. I regret those mistakes. Okay. I think, in fairness, Joe, some of what I've achieved in my life, not for myself. I was very passionate about my work as a public representative. I was very passionate about my work.
If you hadn't fallen in 2005, I know you said in a previous interview, your fortune teller told you when you were three that you would be Taoiseach. If you hadn't fallen in 2005, do you think you were junior minister, you were young, do you think you would have gone on, and then we were coming into the whole, we're in the middle of the Celtic Tiger era, and then there was an incredible victory for Fianna Fáil, do you think you would have gone on to higher things?
I don't know, Joe. That's something that I'll never know. I suppose one thing that I would say, Richard Nixon had a debate with John F. Kennedy prior to a presidential election, and after the election, Nixon said he'd never be president, and he went on to become a president. So look, we don't know what the future holds. Particularly in political life, you never know. I'm very passionate about I remain very passionate about my work, the work that I did. I was always attracted, might I add, Joe, to the work of activists, and indeed you were a good activist mm-hmm. yourself. But I was always attracted to the work of activists, and I worked hard throughout my career, and I really enjoyed the challenges that were put before me. And I came from a very humble background. My parents were just plain ordinary parents, and we didn't have an easy life. I'm very happy.
Okay. I think that your description of that accident and your truth telling about the impact physically, both inside, anyone that sees you knows that you've been through and are going through a very, very tough time physically. But then you talked about the internal injuries, which are obviously difficult as well. Ivor Callaghan, I wish you a continued recovery. You've incredible willpower. I don't know, is that Dale Carnegie? Where does that come from, Ivor, your willpower?
I don't know. I think it's probably both my parents had great determination.
Okay.
And I probably got it from them. But can I say, Joe, before we conclude, I wouldn't have survived without some very special people who were my crutch when I needed them. Yeah. There were some good, genuine friends of long-standing, other newfound friends on a similar journey to me who bonded to overcome our challenges, and also some very special angels in the services that I met along the way. Okay. And I want to pay tribute and thank all who helped me through this very difficult period. I'm indebted.
Okay.
And I now grapple with the challenges of life. But, you know, I'm not the only one. There's many, many other people who have, life has radically changed. And it's tough going, but we manage.
Okay. Ivor Callaly, thanks indeed, and continued recovery, Ivor, and I appreciate your time and kind regards to you and your family. That's Ivor Callaly, back after this break.